Okay, good morning. As usual, the shiur today is dedicated by Gary and Toby Greenstein in memory of their son Yomi Yosef Menachem Zal Ben Gershon. And the weekly breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Le'ilui Nishmas Shimon Ben Zeev and Fega Bas Chaim. And we are in Maseches Tanis on Daf Lamed. Last week, we left off kind of the very bottom of Daf Chaf Tes and Beis, in the middle, or towards the end of a discussion, a three-way machlokes as to when some of the Nihugim, that we think of as the Nihugim of the 3 weeks or the 9 days, what period do they cover? Is it 3 weeks, 9 days, Rosh Chodesh, the whole month? So if you recall, there was a three-way machlokes among Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Meir said, at least with respect to, well, there were two versions of the Mishnah, of the Braisa rather, but one version said we're talking about getting a haircut and doing laundry, right? And the other said we're talking generally about the Nihugei Avelos. Rabbi Meir said it starts from Rosh Chodesh and goes until Tisha B'Av, in other words, the 9 days. Rabbi Yehuda said it covers Kol HaChodesh Kulo, meaning all of Chodesh Av, which Rashi says means literally all of Chodesh Av, even after Tisha B'Av. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, "Eino Oser Ela Oso Shabbos Bilvad, the week of Tisha B'Av, not Shavu Shechalbo that we think of, which is the week up until Tisha B'Av, but the entire week of Tisha B'Av. So if, let's say Tisha B'Av is on a Wednesday. I don't know if it can be on a Wednesday. On a Wednesday, so we recover, you know, from Sunday through Shabbos, that entire week. That was the three-way machlokes. And we said they're all grounded in this pasuk from Hosea. And then the Gemara says on the third line of Daf Lamed, the Amar Rava, or skip before that, the second line, Amar Rava, Halacha K'Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel, as if to say the halacha is that it covers the entire week of Tisha B'Av. The Amar Rava, and that same Rava says Halacha K'Rabbi Meir. He says Halacha is like a Meir that goes from Rosh Chodesh, as if to say from the 9 days. So the Gemara clarifies, how's Rava saying both ways? Which way is it? V'tarvayu l'kula. He's delimiting the shitas l'kula. V'tzricha. D'yashmin and halacha k'rabbi meir. What he means to say is shvur shachalbo as we know it, from Sunday until Tisha B'Av, however, whichever day it falls out. That's what Rabbi Meir means to be saying. And so he's saying, D'yashmin halacha k'rabbi meir, if he just said like Rabbi Meir, that it goes from Rosh Chodesh, Hav Amin Afilu Mir Rosh Chodesh, then you would understand Rabbi Meir literally to be saying it's the entire 9 days that these new Gemara apply. So therefore he says, no, Halachah K'Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that it's only that week, Shavuot Shechalbo, starting on Sunday. But if he just said that week, Hav Amin Afilu Acharav, then we would understand Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's Shita to be the entire, as it is, the entire week. K'mashma Halachah K'Rabbi Meir, as if to say, it's only until Tisha B'Av. So if you kind of put the cross-section of those two shitas, is Shavuot Shechalbo as we know it, from Sunday through the day of Tisha B'Av, that's when it's usher to do laundry, and usher to get a haircut, and the other various Nihugei Avelos, as we'll see going forward in the sugya, on the rest of Daf Lamed, the Gemara is much more makil than we are in our practice, right? We have these Nihugim all 9 days, maybe even for the 3 weeks. But the Gemara is, as we see already, is talking in much more limited terms, only for Shavuot Shechalbo. But we'll see that flesh out with respect to other halachos as well. Okay, so, such as the next halacha. Gemara quotes from Mishnah, Erev Tisha B'Av, Lo Yochol Adam Shnei Tavshilin. So on Erev Tisha B'Av, said the Mishnah, you shouldn't eat two Tavshilin. And we're going to get into a discussion now as to whether that's the entire day of Erev Tisha B'Av, or is it just talking about the Sudim of Sekes. So Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, Lo shanu ela mishesha usulamala. This is only true for the latter half of the day, from the sixth hour of the day and onward. Ava mishesha usulamata, but the morning, the first half of the day, mutter, it's permitted or it's permissible to eat two cooked items. Let's just define what cooked items are. So there's a Tosfos here. Actually, before we get to this Tosfos, let me just, I skipped the first Tosfos. It's a fascinating, this whole Daf Lamed, every Tosfos is chock full of information. So the first Tosfos on the Amud, V'tarvayu l'kula, this is going back on the first part where we were talking about the Nihugim and whether they, and the fact that Rava holds that they cover Shvuah Shechalbo. So Tosfos says at the end, if you look at the last five lines of the Tosfos, he says, Aval Hecha Dechal Tisha B'Av Behei B'Shabbos. In a year where Tisha B'Av falls out on Thursday, Mutter L'Chaves L'Saper Mechatzos Ve'lach. You could already get a haircut and do laundry from midday on Tisha B'Av itself on that Thursday, Mipnei Kavod HaShabbos, because you're going to run out of time. You're not going to have enough time on Friday to do everything. So he says you can start already doing these things on Tisha B'Av. It tells De'in Lahamtim Ad Erev Shabbos Mipnei Torah HaShabbos. It's too much to fit into Friday. This is a very controversial statement of Tosfos, and everyone kind of rejects it. La'alacha. The Beis Yosef kind of says, no, no, this is absolutely not the halacha. The Gra in his Agos here on the Amud just deletes this, these five lines, and it doesn't ever appear again in the Poskim, meaning among the Rishonim there's discussion of it, but when you get down to Shulchan Aruch, it's not quoted la'alacha, it's not quoted in any of the halacha sfarim. So this is kind of, this is the only time you see it, and then it disappears. Okay. Sorry, back on topic. We were talking about the tafshilin. You could only eat two tafshilin, at least according to Rav Yehuda, in the latter half of the day, after chatzos. So what are two tafshilin? That's the next Tosfos, where he points out that it's two tafshilin in the colloquial way you'd say two dishes, like, you know, the potatoes and the chicken. But not, he says, where you have chicken with onions on it. Those onions aren't considered a second tafshil because they're part of the tafshil. And then Tosfos, again controversially, points out at the very end of this Tosfos, Tosfos Dimaraskal Erev, that he says that anything that's nechal kmo shulchai, something that would be eaten raw also, if you cook it, that's not considered a tafshil. So for example, I don't know, carrots. Carrots are eaten raw, and you could cook carrots. So he says that's not considered a tafshil. That wouldn't violate this prohibition against eating two tafshil. That wouldn't count as one of the two tafshilin. The Rush quotes the Ravid as disagreeing with this, and the Shulchan Aruch disagrees with this and says no. For purposes of what we're going to ultimately pass in as the Sudam of Sekes, or for the purposes of what you could eat on Erev Tisha B'Av, a tafshil is anything that's cooked, even if it's carrots, even if you would have eaten it raw. That's considered a cooked item. You have to count it as one of the tafshilin. Okay, so now that we've defined what a tafshil is, back in the Gemara, we said Rav Yehuda said the latter half of the day would be impermissible, but the first half of the day is not. And then Rav Yehuda goes on. V'amar Rav Yehuda lo shanu ela besuda hamafsik ba. This is only true, the prohibition only exists for the Suda Mafsekas, the last meal that you eat before the fast. But if you have lunch earlier in the day, or if you have breakfast, mutter, then it's permissible to have two tafshilin, two cooked items. And then the Gemara again delimits it and says, Vitarvayu Lakula. Both these statements of Rabbi Yehuda are meant to come up with a kula. Vitzricha, as follows. D'iyashminan. If he would have just said that the prohibition applies to the Suda Mafsekes, Hava Mina Afilu Mishesha Usumata, I might have thought that if the last meal I eat is breakfast and I just decide not to eat anything more, so then maybe the prohibition of eating two tafshilin should apply even to my breakfast because it was the last meal I ate before the fast. That was my de facto Suda Mafsekes. So he comes to teach you, no, the prohibition is only going to apply in the latter half of the day. And if he would have just said that the prohibition applies in the latter half of the day, I would have thought that if I eat a snack or a late lunch that precedes my Suda Mafsekes, the prohibition would apply in that meal also. He comes to teach you that the prohibition of eating two tafshil and two cooked items only applies to the Suda Mafsekes. So in other words, you need to fulfill both conditions in order for the prohibition to apply. It's got to be the Suda Mafsekes, meaning the last meal you eat before the fast, and it's got to be in the latter half of the day after chatzos. And only then does the prohibition against eating two tafshilin apply. Okay. Tanya, now we just are going to kind of bring source or backup Bryce's to kind of back up this idea of the Sheishos and the Suda Mafsekes. Tanya Kushna Kama, Tanya Kushna Basra. We have a Bryce that is consistent with the first Memra of Rav Yehuda, which is to say that it applies only in the latter half of the day, the Sheishos, Olamala. Tanya Kalishna Basra, and we have another Abraisa that is consistent with his statement that it's got to be the last meal in the day, and only then does the prohibition apply. So Tanya Kalishna Basra, here's the Tana that's consistent with the idea that it's only in the Sudim Afsekas that it applies. Hasoid Erev Tisha B'Av, someone who eats on Erev Tisha B'Av, im asid lisod suda acheres, mutter lechol basar v'lishtos yayin. If he plans to eat another meal, meaning if this is not his Sudam Afsekas, so then it's perfectly permissible for him to eat meat and drink wine in that Suda. Vimlav asr lechol basar v'lishtos yayin. And if not, then, meaning if this is his Sudam Afsekas, so then it's prohibited for him to eat meat and for him to drink wine. We'll just take a pause to say this should kind of strike us as strange, because whoever would eat meat or drink wine, no matter what Suda it was on Erev Tisha B'Av, we thought you can't eat meat and drink wine already from the beginning of the 9 days. So it turns out that the halacha is, or I should say the minug is, as we know, that we don't eat meat and drink wine already for the 9 days. But the din of the Gemara, if you actually look in the strict halacha in the Gemara, is exactly this, that the prohibition on eating meat and drinking wine only really applies to the Sudam Afsekas. That's the baseline.
It's an Ashkenazic minhag, because I was by Svardin.
Yeah.
And in Englewood, the Rav there, the Swati Rav, he had a shear, and people were raising that whole thing about, he says, no, our minhag is just like, look, haircuts only on Tisha B'Av, okay? We can have anything we wanted, you know, like during the 3 weeks, meat and yayin, whatever you want to do, just Tisha B'Av was us.
So that, I think that's true in terms of the, aren't they knowing for Shmuel Shechalba? I think they are. Yeah. I can tell you, at least what I know for in terms of meat and wine, that for sure, they're noheg of Shavuot Shechalba, because the Shulchan Aruch itself, the Mechaber, quoting the Rambam, based on a Yerushalmi, says that the prohibition of eating meat and drinking wine, I shouldn't say the prohibition, the minug is that we don't eat meat and drink wine already starting with Shavuot Shechalba with the Sunday, even though, as we just saw, the Gemara allows it even on Erev Tisha B'Av.
Scotch is okay.
Right, so that's the Shulchan Aruch based on the Rambam. The Ramban brings it back already to Rosh Chodesh, meaning the 9 days as we know it. And the Kolbo says you can't eat meat and drink wine already from the 3 weeks, but we don't do that. None of these say this is a strict halacha. They all say it's the minhag. Fine, that's where we are. Okay, so that was the Tanya Kushna Basra. Now we have a Tanya Kushna Kama. We have a Braisa consistent with the idea that the Sheishos is the operative cutoff. Erev Tisha B'Av, lo yochel adam shnei shavshilin. On Erev Tisha B'Av, you should not eat two cooked items. Lo yochel basar v'lo yishtei ayin. You should not eat meat. You should not drink wine. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Yeshana. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you should not necessarily apply this strictly, but you should just do something that's different than your normal practice during the year. We'll see. Amar Rav Yehuda, Kate said Mishana. So Rav Yehuda says, what should you do differently? What should you do to change your practice? He says the following example. If in a normal meal throughout the year you have two cooked items at your table, then yochal minecha. Then, okay, downgrade to one cooked item. And if you typically have meals with all your friends there, with 10 people, so then downgrade to having 5 people there. If you normally have 10 shots of wine at your meal, so then downgrade to 5 cups. But here's the important part for our purposes. All these restrictions are downgrading. They apply mishei shos ulamala. They apply in the latter half of the day after chatzos. Aval mishei shos ulamata. But in the morning, mutter, it's permissible to eat in the normal course, even on Erev Tisha B'Av. Tanya Idach, we have another version of the Braisa. Erev Tisha B'Av lo yochol adam shnei tavshilin. On Erev Tisha B'Av, you should not eat two cooked items. You should not eat meat, you should not drink wine. Divrei Rabbi Meir, that's Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Omrim, Yeshana, Umimait, Basar, Uviyayin. So the Chachamim say you should change it up in terms of the two tafshilin, and you should also downgrade or decrease the amount of meat or wine that you eat. Ketzad mamait, for example, how is this done? In hayaragil lechol litra basar, if you normally eat a big amount of basar, litra, volume of basar, yochol chatzi litra, you should go eat half of that. Hayaragil lishtos lug yayin, if you normally eat a lug of yayin, so yishta chatzi lug, you should drink a half a lug yayin. Vim eno ragil kolikar, if you are someone who doesn't eat meat at all typically, or doesn't drink a lot of wine at all typically, usser, so then you just shouldn't eat or drink any of it. Rishon Gamliel Omer im haya ragil lechol tznon omaliach achar sudaso harishas biado, if you would normally eat these types of onion or
a radish.
Okay, thanks. A radish after your suda, you should. That's fine. Tanya Ido, we have another version of Brisa that says kol shehu mishum tisha bav aser lechol baser aser lishtos yain. Any meal that is directly correlated to tisha bav, meaning the suda mafsekes, so that's where the prohibition resides, and you can't eat. you can't eat meat, you can't drink wine in the suda mafsekes. And furthermore, v'aser lirchotz kol she'eino mishum v'aser lirchotz, and you shouldn't wash just before Tisha B'Av. Kol she'eino mishum Tisha B'Av, however, if it's a meal that's not directly connected to Tisha B'Av, meaning another meal in the day, so muter lechol basar v'lishtos yayin, then you are allowed to v'aser lirchotz, however, on Erev Tisha B'Av you should not wash. Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi Omer Mishum Aviv, he quotes his father as saying, Kol Shah Shemutter Lechol, the Rashi and the Vilna Gaon both get rid of the word Basar here. So he says, Kol Shah Shemutter Lechol, Mutter Lirchotz, they say that as long as you're allowed to eat, meaning up until the fast starts, you're allowed to wash. There's no prohibition of washing on Erev Tisha B'Av. As we know, our minug is not to wash. Although I should say that was the minhag. Now the minhag in America, we're all, as Rav Moshe points out, we're all istanis and we're all very sensitive about washing. So the minhag is to wash, but with slightly colder water during Tisha B'Av. But we, at least in the Fiuk and the Poskim, there is this concept of not washing during the 9 days. So again, this is another example where Medina de Gemara, it appears, you're absolutely permitted to wash up until the fast, at least according to this Shita, or at least maybe until some point on Erev Tisha B'Av. But here too, the minug, as mentioned by the Torah and mentioned by various early Rishonim, is not to wash already during the 9 days. The Torah and the Mordechai attribute this to the Ravia, who was an early Rishon. He was the one who first kind of applied this beyond the confines of the Gemara to say that it applies to the entire 9 days. Okay. Do we go to the mikveh Erev Tisha B'Av? I don't know. I'm not a mikveh guy. Do people go to the mikveh Erev Tisha B'Av? I mean, certainly for a woman, a woman would go to the mikveh during the 9 days. For a man, I don't know. People Chassidim would go to the mikveh regularly. Do they not go on Erev Tisha B'Av? I'm not sure.
I think they go Shabbos morning or Erev Shabbos.
Yeah, there are
a lot of people
who go
Erev.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that Chassidim, if they didn't go to take a bath all week long, I don't know if they'd go to the mikvah.
I don't know. Maybe that is their bath. No. I don't know.
Maybe.
You have to ask a Chassid. Okay.
Stroller,
right. Okay. The Gemara continues and says, Tanu Rabbanan, Kol mitzvos hanoagos b'avel, noagos b'tisha b'av. So it says generally that the restrictions that apply to Avelos apply to Tisha B'Av. So for example, Aser Ba'achila, Ubishtia, Uvesicha, Uvenilas Asando, Uvetashmish Amita. These are the main restrictions we are aware of. You can't eat, you can't drink, you can't anoint yourself with oils, you cannot wear leather shoes, Uvetashmish Amita, you can't have marital relations. Furthermore, Va'aser Likros Bitora, Benevim ubiksuvim, you can't learn Torah on Tisha B'Av, you can't learn Tanakh, Ushanas b'mishnah b'talmud, you can't learn Mishnah, Gemara, b'medresh, of halachos, of agadah. So all the various forms of Talmud Torah you cannot engage in on Tisha B'Av. Aval korehu b'makom she'eno ragil likros, v'shona b'makom she'eno ragil lishanos. This is interesting. The Gemara says, at least this version of the Braisa says, that even though there's generally a prohibition on learning Torah on Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to learn something that you haven't learned before, as Rashi, I think it's Rashi, points out, Dekeven de lo yada islay tzara. You've never, for example, Gemara is tough. When you first go through a sugya for the first time, you're making a leaning on a Gemara, you break your teeth over it. It's not so much fun, they say, right? So therefore, says Rashi, since that's not, like, the real joy of Talmud Torah, says Rashi, is where you're learning a Gemara for the second time, the third time, you kind of flow through it, you know it, you feel comfortable with it. But if you're learning for it for the first time ever, that would be okay. I looked this up in the Shulchan Aruch. Did I write it down? I looked this up in the Shulchan Aruch. We'll get to it. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with this. But this is at least one braisa that says that you can learn something for the first time. And then furthermore, v'kori v'kinos v'iov v'dvar ma'arayim shebi'irmiya, you can learn the sad parts of Tanakh, things about the Churban, things about bad things happening. Vitinoko shall base Rabban and children. The Girsa here changes to the Gra, changes the Girsa, and others change the Girsa to Einan Betalin. They should not stop learning, period. And then they get rid of the next several words, which we'll see it in another line.
Well, Rashi points out that it's not exact correlation to Adol, because Adol does eat and does drink.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That's right. That's correct. It starts off by saying Kol Mitzvos Nogos Bavu Nogos Bedusha Bavu. You're right. That doesn't apply to Avilos. Okay. So that's the first opinion here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says slightly differently. Af Eino Kori B'Makom Sheino Ragel Ukros Eino Shov B'Makom Sheino Ragel Shanos. So he says this idea that if it's your first time going through a Gemara and you're going to break your teeth over it, and therefore it's not so satisfying, therefore you can learn. He rejects that. He says you can't learn Torah at all. And that, in fact, the Torah says that's how we paskin. Aval korehu be'iov v'kinos v'dvarim arayim shebi'irmiyahu. He says you can learn the sad parts of Tanakh, sad things. And then he says, v'tinokos shel beis rabban b'teilin bo. Unlike the Tanakhama, who had said that children can learn, that we teach children, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says, no, even children are bound by this prohibition on learning Talmud Torah, learning Torah on Tisha B'Av. Shenemar, the pasuk says that Torah is fun, Torah is satisfying, and therefore we don't learn Torah on Tisha B'Av. Fine. Now the Gemara quotes the Mishnah again. And we're going to talk about forms of eating meat and drinking wine that might be permitted. Tana, we have a braisa that says aval ochel hu basar maliach. He may eat salted basar, vishosa yayin migito, and he can drink unfermented or wine in the process of fermenting, meaning while it's still grape juice, while it's not fully fermented, that's okay. So the Gemara then says, basar moliach ad kama. What's considered basar moliach? How long is it considered meat still before it kind of changes and turns and becomes something that we wouldn't consider meat and we would allow you to eat? Meaning, you're allowed to eat it after it's moliach, after it's already gone through a process of being salted, being pickled. Then it would kind of lose its status as basar, and then you would be able to eat it. So what's the time? How long does it take?
So a steak is
a piece of jerky?
I was thinking of corned beef, but I was saying a steak would be no good, but corned beef, you're saying.
That's at least what the Gemara is going to say. We're going to see Tosfos again is going to modify this. We'll see in a second.
Right. I don't know.
So we'll see, Tosfos is going to modify this. But for now, the Gemara says, how long does it take for the meat to turn so that it would become permissible? Kol zman shu tosei. Wait, no, I just skipped the line. Basar moyach ad kama, amrav chinina barkana mishmei de Shmuel. He says, kol zman shehu kishlamim. As long as it's considered shlamim. Rashi points out that shlamim has a time period of eating of shnei yamim v'layl echad. 2 days and the night in between. So 2 full days, basically. That's the point at which shlamim then becomes usser. And the pasuk says, after that, v'anosar mi basar zevach ha-shlamim, that it becomes no star and becomes prohibited and has to be burnt. You can't eat it. So, but interestingly, says Rashi, the pasuk refers to that as basar still, right? Vanosar mi basar zevach hashlamim. So the pasuk says that after that period of 2 days and the one night in between, that's where the pasuk stops calling it basar, or still calls it basar at that point. That after that, who knows what whether it's considered meat? And so the Gemara derives from the fact that the Gemara refers to that meat for that period of time as basar, that meat after that maybe doesn't have the status of basar, and that's why if you salt it for more than 2 days and the night in between, that's when it loses its status of basar, is no longer considered basar. But Tosfos points out, in the last Tosfos here, he says, for us, asr lecho basar afil maluach mizman ruba, even if you salt it for a long time, even if it's really serious beef jerky, because that's a delicacy for us. We eat that as meat, right? We eat corned beef all the time. We eat beef jerky. And so, unfortunately, this school is not going to apply. You're going to have to make a siyum to eat meat on Erev Tisha B'Av, or I should say during the 9 days, according to our minhag. It's not going to be enough to salt it. Okay. That's as far as the meat goes. V'yayim yigito ad kama. How long is fermenting wine considered not yet wine so that you could drink it? Kol zman shu toseis, as long as it is still fermenting. Tana yain toseis ein bo mishum giwoy. And here's a backup of this idea that as long as it's still fermenting, it has the status of grape juice and not yet of wine, because this is relevant for another halacha of giwoy. The Gemara here and elsewhere has this halacha that if you have wine that's sitting, or even water that's sitting on a shelf unattended overnight, you can't drink it because it's a sakana, because a poisonous snake might have drank from it and put some of his venom in the liquid, and then you put yourself in danger. Shulchan Aruch says this doesn't apply nowadays, is because, as we know, this isn't really a danger. Although there are still some people that are careful about this and won't drink a glass of water that's left out overnight. And so for that purpose, the Gemara asks, or the Brisa says, how long is it still considered fermenting so that it's no longer, so that it's still impermissible? Gimel Yamim, 3 days. Amrav Yudah Marav, Kachayim in Hagosho Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Ulai. Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Ulai had a minog that Erev Tisha B'Av, Mevi'im lo pas chareva b'melach. So they would bring him kind of spoiled or dried out bread with salt, the Yoshev bein taner with kiraim, and he would sit, as Rashi points out, in a makam menuval shavabais, in a kind of ugly, unattractive part of his house, v'ochel v'shosa aleha kiton shalmayim, and he would eat that bread, and he would drink a jug of water, v'doma k'mishamesa mutal afanav. He would act as if someone who had just experienced the loss of a loved one. That was that how he ushered in Tisha B'Av, and that's generally our minhag. We eat on the floor and kind of quietly and just basic bread and water and ashes and nothing else. Okay, now we move on to halachos of Tisha B'Av itself. Tanan Hasan, we have a Mishnah. Makom shenagu lasos melacha b'tisha b'av osin. If you live in a place where the minhag is to go to work on Tisha B'Av, to do work on Tisha B'Av, you can. Makom shenagu shlo lasos ein osin. But if the minhag is not to, then you don't. Uvachol makom tamidei chachamim b'teilim. Generally speaking, tamidei chachamim should not do work on Tisha B'Av, or should not learn on Tisha B'Av. Rishonim gamliel omer. He says, ideally, everyone should act like a Talmud Chacham. In other words, no one should do any work on Tisha B'Av. Tanya Nami Achi, we have a price supporting this. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Li'olam Yasa Adam Atzmo Katam Chacham, Kadeshi Yisana. A person should always make himself like a Talmud Chacham on Tisha B'Av, so that he should be, again, is part of the Inui, part of the commemoration of the day. Tanya Yidach, another price says, it's very, very bad to eat or drink on Tisha B'Av. It's as bad as, or almost as bad as, eating or drinking on Yom Kippur, where there's an Isser Karis. That's serious stuff. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Kol Osam Lacha B'Tisha B'Av, Eino Roa Simin Bracha Li'Olam. So he says what sounds like a very sweeping, generalized statement, that anyone who does Melacha on Tisha B'Av will never see Simin Bracha Li'Olam, will never see any Bracha in his life. So Tosos qualifies that a little and says, Ba'osa Melacha. You're not going to benefit from that work itself. It's not to say you're doomed forever, but you might as well not do your work on Tisha B'Av because you're never going to see a Simin Bracha. You're not going to get profits from that work.
It's not going to work out. The Kiva's statement seems to be, as you said, very general and blanket.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a Gerasa issue or if he's just interpreting it that way. I think you could kind of interpret Rabbi Kiva that way also, in your own Simin Bracha. I don't know. And furthermore, the Chacham Omrim Kol Osa Melacha B'Tisha B'Av Beino Mesabel Yerushalayim, someone who does work on Tisha B'Av and is flippant and doesn't regard the day as such a serious day and therefore is not Mesabel Yerushalayim, is not mourning the fall of Yerushalayim, Eino Roa B'Simchasa, he will not see in the rebuilding of the of Yerushalayim. And he bases this on a Pasuk, Shenemar Simchas Yerushalayim V'Gilu B'Kol Aveh, rejoicing Yerushalayim, all its lovers, sisu ita masos kol ha-misabon aleha, right? You should rejoice in it, or great joy, all the people who are mourning for it. Mikan amru, from this day derives, kol ha-misabel Yerushalayim, zoche veroa b'simchasa. Anyone who mourns Yerushalayim, he will be zoche to participate in its simcha, in its rebuilding. V'she'eno misabel Yerushalayim, someone who does not mourn Yerushalayim, Eino roa b'simchasa, he will not partake in the simcha of Yerushalayim, the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. Tanyanami hachi, we have another brace that says, Kol ochel basar v'shosiyayim b'tisha b'av, anyone who eats or drinks on Tisha B'Av, alav akasiv omer v'atihi avonosam, alatmosam, his avonos are on his bones or whatever. Again, saying that this is serious stuff. You've committed a sin on the bones of the destruction of Yerushalayim. Okay. Interestingly, I'll just point out, the top Tosos here is also chock full of information. If you just fly through the Tosos, you'll see. He starts off with this clarification of Rabbi Akiva, that you don't get a Simen Bracha from that Malacha that you did. Then he goes on and he says, V'chayelam adam v'tzayir u'mayit b'chlodu v'an'oso shim hayraga lishkav ashnei karim l'yishkav kimal echad. If you generally sleep on two pillows, you should take one pillow away, or one mattress, one pillow, whatever. He points out, aval ubros ha-meinikos einon chayavos kulei hai. He points out that if you're nursing or pregnant, don't go crazy with this. We don't want to do anything that would be unhealthy. Another interesting tidbit in this Tosfos, if you go down a few lines, he says also on Yom Kippur, he says, V'ochlin suda mafsekes mi bo'od yom, you start the suda mafsekes before Tisha B'Av, obviously, you're going to start it before, and then he says, V'chinam yom ha-kippurim sarach lisod mi bo'od yom, he points out that on Yom Kippur, you also do a suda mafsekes before the fast, the tosefes yom ha-kippurim in a Torah. So interestingly, we generally think of this idea, there's an idea of Tosefes Yom Kippurim, that there's a mitzvah based on the Pasuk Me'erev V'ad Erev to add on to Yom Kippur, to start Yom Kippur a little early. Tosos links this to the concept of the Suda Mafsekes, as if to say the Suda Mafsekes is part of the commemoration of Yom Kippur, and that's a chiyuv, that's a kiyum in Tosefes Yom Kippurim. And then he points out, if you go to the very bottom of the Tosis, he points out that halacha is that the Suda Mafsekes doesn't have to be the last thing. You can have your Suda Mafsekes on both Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. You could bench and then still have a glass of water or a snack before the fast. I guess Tisha B'Av not. You don't. We don't have a snack afterwards. But you can still have a glass of water, let's say, after you've benched. Your Suda Mafsekes doesn't have to be, there's no like hard and fast rule that has to be the last thing you eat. Okay, now the Gemara continues and quotes the Mishnah saying, Rabbi Yehuda mechayev bekfias hamita v'hodu lo chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says that just like an avel has to turn over his bed, there used to be this halacha in Hilchos Avelos that we don't have anymore, as we'll see in the Gemara soon, that you turned over all the beds in the house. And so Rabbi Yehuda says, here too you turn over the beds. The Chachamim did not agree. Let's see. Tanya Amru or Rabbi Yehuda. So the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda in this Braisa, with Varecha, according to what you're saying, that you have to turn over all the beds, Ubro Sumeinikos Mate Alein. So people who are nursing or are pregnant, who should sleep on a comfortable bed for health reasons, what's going to be with them? If you turn over all the beds in the house, what are they going to sleep on? So Amar Lahen, so he said, Afani wa Amarti al Biyachol. He says, no, I only meant to say for people that can turn over the beds. But obviously, if you're talking about a pregnant or a nursing woman, she gets to keep her bed upright. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a similar price that says, Mowder Rabbi Yehuda Chachamim B'sheino Yachol. Umodim Chachamim Rabbi Yehuda B'yachol. This price says that Rabbi Yehuda was molded to the Chachamim that if you can't sleep on a turned over bed, then you keep your bed upright. And it also says that the Chachamim were molded to Rabbi Yehuda that if you can turn over your beds, then you should do so. Meaning, he agrees that it's only this prohibition only applies to people who can withstand that. So the Gemara immediately asked the obvious question, Mai Benayu, if the Chachamim are agreeing with Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda is agreeing with the Chachamim, that this prohibition only applies to the situation where you can do it. It doesn't apply to pregnant and nursing women. So then what are they fighting about? Why does this appear like it'd be a machlokas? So the Gemara says, Ika b'nayu shar mitos. They're only arguing about the other beds in the house. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda, who seemed more expansive in saying that you should turn over the beds, he meant to say turn over all the beds in the house. And the Chachamim are saying you only have to turn over the beds that people sleep on. You don't have to turn over all the beds in the house. Kid, the Tanya, consistent with the following Braisa, Kishamru Chapo Samita, Omitaso Bovadu Kofa, El Ko Amitos Kuanu Kofa. Generally speaking, this is a Braisa in the context of Hilchos Avelos, that the Nihug, the custom of turning over the beds, applied not only to the beds that people actually sleep on, but that you'd symbolically turn over all the beds in the house. And that's where the Chachamim said, don't go so far in Tisha B'Av. You don't have to turn over all the beds, only turn over the beds that people are sleeping on. Amar Rava Hilchasa Ketana Yidan. They changed the Girsa. Dika Amar V'lahodu L'Chachamim Kol Ikar. So the Halacha is, it sounds like it's saying, the Halacha is like the Chachamim, as if to say, only turn over the beds that you are sleeping on. Tosfos immediately points out here, and this is true both for Hilchos Tisha B'Av and for the Hilchos Avelos. Tosfos points out, Va'idna dechayshinim l'kshafim lo avdinim kfiyas amita v'afilu b'avel. He says, nowadays where we're choshesh for kshafim. What does that mean, we're choshesh kshafim? So the Shulchan Aruch says, based on his Tosfos and other Mishonim, that nowadays this concept of turning over beds doesn't apply at all. He says, "Achshav lo nagu mipnei sheyomru ha'akum shehu machashefos," because we're afraid that non-Jews who see this practice among us will view this as some sort of witchcraft. Apparently, there was some witchcraft kind of practice out there among the non-Jews to turn over beds, and so because that was so prevalent, we kind of took a step back and said we're not going to start turning over beds because it looks too much like witchcraft, and so nowadays we don't do that. As the Shach, however, points out in Shulchan Aruch, the Shach points out we still have a minhag of sitting on the floor. It's not to say that we should be sitting on a full chair. The Shulchan Aruch also throws in a second reason why we don't do this nowadays. He says our beds are not like their beds. There was something specific about the way the beds were built that made turning them over some kind of velus.
Well, it's probably just like a mattress, so when they turn it over, it's as if they're actually sleeping on the floor because the bottom part was probably dirty or dusty.
Maybe. Okay.
So it's just like sitting on the floor. So now I'm actually like sleeping on a mattress, but it's like kind of like being on the floor.
Whereas if we flip over our bed, it's just...
You can't flip over your bed. You
know, you'll get our box spring. Right.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Well, I think, though, I'm not sure what I'm about to say came into play, but the mattresses at some point were suspended by some sort of string that was underneath it.
Instead of a box spring, it was ropes.
It was ropes.
Rope.
Like camp bunks.
Right.
I could see where sleeping on those ropes would be
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I could take another minute and say, you've heard that expression, sleep tight. that was because every now and then they would tighten up those ropes.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they referred to.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Good. Okay. Okay, now we get to the bottom of the Yomim and we say, Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Well, how you Yomim Tovim will Yisrael Kechamisha Asar Ba'av Uki Yom Kippurim. The best days of the year, they were not Yom Tovim as good as Chamisha Asar Ba'av, Tu Ba'av, and Yom Kippurim. So the Gemara says, Bishlama Yom Kippurim. We understand why Yom Kippur was a great day of celebration. We refer to Yom Kippur as a yontif, right? We say good yontif on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a happy day because we get atonement. We get slicha mechila. And not only that, but Yom Shenisnu go luchos ha'achronos. It was the day we received the second set of luchos. El tu ba'av mayhi. What's so special about the 15th day of Av? What are we celebrating? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Yom shehutru shvatim lavo zeh bazeh. So, Arudo says in the name of Shmuel, this was the day, that the Shvatim were allowed to intermarry. If you remember the story in towards the end of Bamidbar, you have the Bnos Slavcha. They complain that they want to inherit where they had no brothers, right? They complain they want to inherit the their father's portion, and their wish is granted. But there's a problem here, because the land was split up into the various chalakim for the various shvatim. If women start inheriting land and then they marry someone from another shevet, it's going to mess up the whole chalukos aris. There's going to be parcels of land owned by other shvatim within the chaluka of that particular shevet. And so the Torah fixes this with a few prakim later, towards I think the end of Matos, where it says, what was it, Cain, which Shevet? Cain, I forgot, Benish, Ephraim Dovros, or what's the Balkorah? Whatever it is. One of the Shvatim complained about this fact, and so the Torah said, okay, Hashem said, okay, we're not going to allow intermarriage among Shvatim. Right? It was a direct correlation between these two halachos. In order to prevent this intermingling of the nachlos, of the land. But at a certain, but here, let's see what Gemara says, right? Yom Shutu Shvatim Lava Bazabazah. Tubab was the day where this prohibition was lifted and we were able to intermarry among Shvatim again. My Darsh, how do we know that this is true, that the prohibition of intermarriage among Shvatim only existed for that generation? Because the Pasuk says, Zeha Davar Asher Siva Hashem with no Slavchad. We see from this pasuk that this only applied to this specific generation, but the prohibition was to be lifted in a later generation. And so so what the Gemara is saying here is that Tubav was the day when the prohibition was lifted and we were allowed to intermarry in Shvatim. Now, the inheritance rule didn't go away, right? So we still have the halacha that if there are no male inheritors, the Bnos Slavchad or women inheritors are going to inherit. And so you're kind of left with this anomaly where you have women inheriting land, potentially marrying men from other Shvatim, and now they're allowed to marry men from other Shvatim because the prohibition has been lifted. So how do we deal with that? So the Ramban explains that the prohibition only applied that specific generation because that was the generation when the initial Chalukos Aris took place. And it was very important that the initial Chalukos Aretz take place in a clean way, where every Shevet got its chalik, and there wasn't confusion or, you know, spots of inter Shevet ownership of land within another Shevet's Nachla for that initial generation. After that, it wasn't so bad. And so the reality of the situation was that you generally have the Nachla where, because it was kind of rare for a woman to inherit anyway, because it was only if there were no brothers. And so generally speaking, the boundaries of the various Nachlos of the Shvatim would stay intact, but you would have little spots of parcels owned by other Shvatim within the Nachla of the other Shevet, but that wasn't so terrible. It was only, we only required this very pure Seder Nachlos. It's only pure division of property for that initial chelak, and it doesn't bother us that much if there are spots of intermingled ownership after that. That's what the Ramban says. Okay, Amar Rav Yosef. That's one opinion. Amar Rav Yosef from Rav Nachman, Yom Shehutar Shevet Binyamin, Govo Bakal. It was a similar thing. Later on in Sefer Shoftim, we learn about the terrible story of Pilegesh Begiva, right, where they had done something bad to this woman. And as a result, since the whole thing started with Shevet Binyamin, as a result, they said no one can marry anyone from Shevet Binyamin. But that eventually was lifted. Shenemar of Ish Yisrael Nishba Mitzvah Lemar Ishmenu Yitain Bito Binyamin Isha. That was the prohibition. My darash amarav mimenu v'lo mibanenu. It's only for that generation. Only mimenu from someone from Shevet Binyamin nowadays v'lo mibanenu, but not from our sons. As if to say that the prohibition of marrying from Shevet Binyamin only applied to that generation. And so Rav Yosef Amar Rav Nachman is saying that that prohibition was lifted also on Tu B'Av. They changed the gears here to say Rav Dimi Bar Yosef Amar Rav Nachman Yom Shekalu Bo Maseh Midbar. This is perhaps one of the more famous ones, is that Tu B'Av was the day that the Jews stopped dying on Tisha B'Av, right? After the, for the Dor HaMidbar, every year they would lie down in their makeshift graves on Tisha B'Av with the expectation that many of them would not wake up, and then the ones who survived the night would wake up. And then finally, the last year when all this was happening, the last year they lay down in their graves, they woke up and everyone woke up, so they figured, oh, we must have gotten the date wrong. So they went back the next night, and then they went back the next night, the next night. Eventually, Tu B'Av was the 15th of the night, of the month. They knew that it was a full moon. Mm-hmm. They knew that Tisha B'Av clearly had passed, and they were able to rejoice about the fact that the deaths had stopped, and Kalu B'Av Maseh Midbar, they finished. Tosfos interestingly points out a machlokas Rishonim here. He says the Rashbam says that for these 40 years, the only time when people would die was on Tisha B'Av, right? Tisha B'Av was the time when people would die. But he quotes another opinion that says, "V'yesh mefarshim shayu meisim b'chol yom." Now, people died all the time throughout the year. Ach rov ha-meisim hayu yolim b'tisha b'av. But just the majority of people died on Tisha B'Av. So it's just a slight machlokas as to exactly how this happened. Okay, so continuing that, Yom Shekalu Bo Maseh Midbar. This is the day when they stopped, when they realized that the deaths had stopped of Tisha B'Av. Damar Mar, Ashul Kalu Maseh Midbar La Yadibur in Moshe. Right, we learn from a pasuk that, in fact, this stopped at a certain point because until, while the people were still dying, Hashem didn't speak directly to Moshe. Rashi points out that he might have spoken at some times, but it wasn't pe'al peh, right? Normally, Moshe had a very elevated status of nevuah, where pe'al peh da'arba, that he would speak directly to Hashem, almost like a person to another person, as opposed to other nevi'im, who it was through, dreams or apparitions or whatever like that. So here, Moshe might have still had the lower levels of the Nevuah even during these 40 years. It's just the Pe'al Peh status, the direct transmission of direct communication between Moshe and the Ribono Shalom, didn't restore itself until after Kalum of the same midbar Shinemar, Vayika Sher Tamuko and Shem Milchamalamus, Vaidaber Hashem Eli, Eli Haya Dibor. So again, his communications, his direct communications with Hashem started again after the Mesei Midbar ended.
This was a yearly thing? Or
this was one time? Oh no, I think it's saying at the end of those 40 years, at least that's the way Rashi.
Oh, okay.
At the end of those 40 years, that's when Moshe's status of Nevuah got elevated back up to its original status. That's how I understood Rashi. I think that's correct. Okay. Ula Amar, Yom Shebito Hoshea ben Ewa, Pristios, Shehoshev Yeravim ben Nevat. So Yeravim ben Nevat was the king of Yisrael, which had seceded from the rest of Klal Yisrael, the 10 tribes. They had seceded from Yehuda. There was now a kingdom of Yehuda and a kingdom of Yisrael. Yeravim ben Nevat was a very, very, very bad guy. He forbade, among other bad things that he did, he forbade his subjects from being Ola Regal, from going into the territory of Yehuda to bring Karbanos on the Shalosh Regalim. And one of the things he did, he put watchmen on the roads to make sure no one would go. He would make these Avodah Zarah festivals up north to keep everyone occupied so they wouldn't be tempted to be Ola Regel. So he was a very bad guy. And eventually Hoshea ben Ela was able to get rid of the watchmen and restore the ability of people to go to Yerushalayim for the Regel. So this was the day that he did that, right? Ula Omar Yom Shabito Hoshea ben Ela Prustios Shoshiv Ravam ben Nabat Aladrachim Sholya Yisrael Uregel. The Amar Leizesh Yirtu Yahu. So this was a point in time where they restored the ability of Klal Yisrael to be Ola Regel after the edicts of Yeravam ben Nebat. Okay.